Welcome to Greenhouse Grower to Grower, the podcast where we talk to growers from across the greenhouse industry about market trends, innovation, their biggest challenges and opportunities, and more. I'm Brian Sparks, editor of Greenhouse Grower. Greenhouse Grower's April issue features a heavy focus on perennials, from new varieties to production tips. In the issue, we also address marketing trends, what consumers are looking for in new plants, and how growers and breeders are responding. This gave me the chance to sit down with Justin Wisniewski and Chris Smith at Aris Horticulture and Must Have Perennials. We talked about everything from the growth of first-year flowering varieties to how growers can better engage with consumers. Here's our conversation.
Why don't we talk first about, you know, some of the trends that you're seeing in this market that growers should try and capitalize on?
Sure. Justin, would you like to speak to that?
Sure. So I think, you know, one of the things that we certainly noticed that's been going on for a long while, I think, is just the trend towards, you know, an increased thought and integrating nature inside and being a bit more caring about being stewards for the environment. So, you know, increase in pollinator habitats, native plants, things of that nature continually, you know, are kind of in the forefront of the consumer's mind. So it's certainly something that you know, we always keep in mind as I'm going out and engaging with breeders and looking at new varieties. It's, you know, I always tell Chris, I'm really looking for all these boxes to check, you know, and the more boxes that I can check on any one plant, you know, is it a native, or, you know, obviously we don't deal in natives at all just because, you know, we're an IP brand, but, you know, is it a hybridization of a native or something that's going to integrate well and still contribute well to the pollinator community? That's, you know, certainly, I think, a big trend that we're always looking at, you know. And then I think there's certainly other lifestyle trends, you know, and especially in the edibles market, I think that's something that we're increasingly seeing a lot of emphasis towards. So for us, you know, it's taking a harder look at herbs, various perennial herbs that would fit well into our program. Are there some unique varieties that are coming into the market that, you know, we can kind of capitalize on and get on board with those? You know, I think there's some three real, you know, big trends that I think we're seeing, you know, in the perennial space. There's always the, you know, the thought process of what's new and unique, and that doesn't really ever change. You know, right. That's, you know, the trend's always what's new. And I think pretty rarely do we see, like, well, what's really old and been around for a while? It's not, you know, not on the forefront, but, you know, of tapping into these lifestyle movements, I think, that we see on such a regular basis, you know, is really important for us. So, you know, when we go out and we're snapping pictures or things like that, you know, it's, can we get a picture of a bee? You know, can we get a picture of a butterfly or show that, you know, our plants integrate well into the landscape and are doing more than just sitting there and looking pretty?
Yeah.
You know, I think is key, this multifaceted approach of, you know, what else does it do for the consumer? And I think that's something that's really important for us.
You know, Alan Armitage, our columnist, always writes about solution gardening, and just it sounds exactly, this is right up what he's talking about. You know, it's not, plant just can't be pretty. What does it do?
Right. Yeah. No, Alan's a great friend. And yeah, no, it's, he definitely, he's got a lot of great advice, and it's wonderful to, you know, have somebody who is so influential, you know, to be able to bounce ideas off of him, show him new things and things like that. So
yeah,
that's great. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned, Justin, the breeding side of things, and I know, you know, there's growers and retailers working together. What about growers and breeders? How can growers and breeders kind of work together to make sure that, you know, on the breeding end, they're coming up with varieties that, number one, are going to be easy for the grower to grow, and then are going to be of interest to the consumer as well?
I think that's a really, really important relationship that takes place of, you know, growers, I think, have a tendency at times to be hyper-production focused, and that's well and good that, you know, lots of plants, you know, plant people think all plants are neat, you know, but it doesn't always mean it translates well to a good commercial product that's going to be able to be successful in the marketplace and be successful for, you know, the end user, which is really, you know, the key component in all of this. Is just because we think it's neat and just because it does really well in production doesn't mean, you know, the average gardener or the home user is going to find that same level of enjoyment. So, you know, I think it's really important that everyone stays open and communicative as possible as we go through this process of, you know, research and development all the way to the end user, of making sure that everybody understands what everyone needs. And I think that growers and breeders, more often than not, look at production as the key inputs that are driving a product, whether it's, you know, issues with blight or viruses and diseases that they're trying to build in resistance towards, sure. You know, whether it's faster rooting times and things that are just going to improve the shelf stability of a product in any one way, shape, or form of, mm-hmm. you know, can we make this a little bit shorter and can we get that many more carts on the truck, you know, versus what the end user really wants, the consumer. Of, you know, they really want something that's going to have staying flower power and that's going to, you know, help contribute to the ecosystem around them. And I think it's important that everybody kind of keeps all of those factors in mind as they go through that process that, we want to build, you know, iron plants that can make it through the rigors of various production environments at different times of the year and different parts of the country. But at the end of the day, it's still got to have that level of interest and fit into all those tiny boxes that our consumer is putting together. So, you know, sure. keeping open and, you know, communicative and making sure we don't, I think, at times get too lost in the focus on production that, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just about building in, you know, resistance to some things that, you know, that's not always on the end user's mind. And, you know, it's, I think those things are important going forward because you know, we can get blinders on sometimes to what's really happening out there in the real world, per se.
You know, when it comes to those consumer needs, what's your advice in terms of just how growers can just keep up with, you know, trends and what's happening and make sure that they're adequately addressing what the consumer is looking for?
Sure. I think there's a lot of good organizations out there like yourselves, you know, that really, you know, find ways to engage with consumers. You know, we certainly always look at, you know, various organizations, whether it's Pantone's Color of the Year, you know, but then some of the other key influencers, you know, Martha Stewart, you know, Better Homes and Gardens, and, you know, they stay really keyed in to consumers, whether it's through, you know, surveys, you know, peer engagement. You know, I, for one, just love going out to the garden center and, you know, not being too creepy, but following behind people a little bit, you know, just to hear what it is, some of those conversations and talking to the folks that work in the retail center. I mean, that's, you know, they're on the front line and they really get to hear the questions that consumers are having, you know, and what it is that's really piquing their interest, you know, when they're trying out different end cap displays, what things really resonate well with consumers and kind of get out the door is, you know, the more you can get out there, I think yourself and really engage with folks, you get kind of keyed in. I know Garden Media Group does a good report every year, the industry trends, and, you know, that's certainly valuable. And I think that they just, you know, have a wonderful team that goes out there and is looking at trends in fashion industry and, you know, whether it's music and things like that. And there just tend to be these movements. And fortunately, you know, right now we're in the wonderful industry that's part of this, you know, this cultural movement towards reconnecting with nature. So it's, you know, it's serendipitous. And I think, you know, a good time for us to be in the industry and to capitalize on those things. So, I think just trying to get as many diverse, you know, communication channels as you can to just pull it in and really see what's, you know, if are there commonalities between, you know, these different channels is very helpful.
Okay. You know, you mentioned, you know, trying to get out there and visit retailers more. And, you know, that's certainly important. I would imagine it might be a challenge in the springtime season when a grower's trying to get plants out the door and then the garden centers are trying to get customers in and out the door. Yeah. You know, but that obviously is still important. What about the, you know, as you get out of like the peak of spring and you're starting to look ahead to next year? So is there steps that you can take to work ahead to say, okay, you know, what's from a retailer's perspective, what are your consumers going to be looking for maybe next year in the years ahead? And then what can we do to respond to that?
Sure. You know, and I think that, you know, sometimes in the industry, you know, we really try to push a lot of that information downward as best we can in the intellectual property space of, because, you know, the reality is for us, when we look at material, you know, it's like a 5-6 year pipeline before something really, you know, gets out the door. So we really have to try to be as keyed into that as possible as we're looking at new products and whatever those things might be. I think one, you know, it's always easy for us to look to the past, especially those that have been around. You know, to be able to, there is some, you know, cyclical patterns to some of this, you know, of what we see, you know, as far as trends in the industry. And I think, you know, when we're looking way ahead, it is really important to get out to the big trade shows and to really get together in the industry and, you know, kind of, you know, hit the pavement and do those things. I would say that certainly is an area that I would want to learn more of, you know, growers. We do our own forecasting, right? And we work really closely with our supply chain partners and so forth. But when it gets down into the IGCs, the channels do become a bit limited as to what, you know, where you can get information and how it's gathered. But, you know I personally rely pretty heavily on whether it's social media influencers. I just try to follow the garden writers that are, you know, going out and engaging the public as well.
Sure.
You know, and as well as just organizations like yourselves that are doing a lot of the legwork for us. Cause like you said, we get too busy, you know, it's that travel season hits and, you know, it's run. And it's not easy, you know, getting out there on a Saturday is different than getting out there 5 days a week or something and really engaging folks. So it's, I think that people really have to be creative in what's going to fit, you know, their needs and their time schedule and constraints and get out there. But fortunately, I think social media has played a big part of that, of, you know, who can you really follow that's keyed into trends,
right?
You know, and then taking that, you know, with a grain of salt, knowing that, you know, paid sponsorships are becoming an you know, ever more increasing trend, that, you know, just because we think somebody's a big influencer doesn't mean they're not getting a little cash on the side, and that's well and good. You know, I'm saying we won't do it or don't do it. You know, it's just the way of the world at times. And but paying attention to those things, I think, is really helpful too, is how keyed in are you to social media?
Yeah. I'd like to just add, you know, from the marketing standpoint, what I'm seeing is, and just a lot of the conversations we've had internally about our perennial plants, there's trends towards looking for more compact plants that are great for functional use in pots and containers. You know, the usage of the plants is important. And, you know, like we look at the way the plant is growing, the color, the size, the number of flowers it produces. People like to see lots of flowers on a plant. The other area of interest that's, you know, becoming more desirable is drought tolerant plants. Just because we've all been watching how the climate is changing and affecting zones and, you know, regions, and how our plants are performing. And in particular, landscape designers, people who are looking for plants that are going to do well in the regions that they're working in and trying to design, you know, for. So that's something, you know, I just love that, because, you know, I've come in contact with a couple designers who've made comments about our plants, and they love, you know, they like the height, you know, they like the durability, they like the long interest through the seasons. You know, we have a plant that's a new variety that's been coming up. It's called the Penicetum Water to Wine.
Okay.
And the beauty of this plant is it changes colors through the season. So it's not just like a 1 month and done.
Yeah.
It creates interest throughout, you know, the summer and into the fall. And it's a plant that comes back year after year because it's a perennial. Mm-hmm. It's got height. It's just unique. And those are the kind of plants we like. We like plants that are going to hold people's interest for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
The compact plants, you know, I'm just seeing that as a trend based on what I'm looking at. You know, there's been an increased awareness of like geraniums. You know, we have about 9 different geraniums in our portfolio. And, you know, of course, everyone knows about Roseanne. But we're watching Azure Rush becoming the more focused plant of, you know, people are focusing on that because of the compactness of the plant.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're spending some time on that. You know, let's look at it. We even grew it side by side in the garden to see how it performs. We're going to do that trial again this year and just watch it. The color is another thing, you know, they love plants that really stand out in the garden. And so that's pretty important. What I'm working on right now is a piece on first year flowering perennials. And that, I would say that's another, I don't know if you can call that a trend or if it's just something that people are really interested in.
Yeah.
You know, plants that produce flowers from the get-go, they don't have to wait 2 to 3 years for, you know, their plant to flower. For the independent garden centers, I'm sure that's something they're interested in. Our growers, I had one comment this past week. They really want to see how the plants perform based on their, you know, something similar, you know, do comparison.
Right.
And so that's, I think that's what the growers are kind of looking for. And then the independent garden centers are like, okay, how can we sell this and what's going to appeal to our customers? So those are some of the things that have popped up in my conversations. And it's just interesting, like one of the things Justin and I have talked about is creating programs for the plants. Mm-hmm. So the marketing of, you know, includes everything from social media to videos to content writing, blogs. You know, we do a lot of e-blasts and, you know, I want to make sure you're on our list for media.
Yeah.
And of course, new varieties are always interesting, but the program idea is where you kind of group categories, but certain plants fit into a different program. Like if we're talking about Western landscapes, or if you're talking about, you know, cooler areas, you know, climate areas, what plants do well in those regions. Again, first year flowering is definitely would be a program. I would say anything that is really used well in like a landscape design.
Sure.
Those are some of the programs I'm thinking about right now. I'm sure there's more, but I think that's going to be a trend in marketing is for the IGCs to sort of, okay, so these plants fit into this program and we can kind of put them together because that's our customers are looking for this type of plant.
Yeah.
And I think that might be helpful to think about, like, you know, how are they placing the plants within the, you know, within their centers? You know, we look at a lot of different things, like our helichrysums are a plant that, you know, they're drought tolerant, they grow well, you know, in dry areas. But Justin said several times that we'd love to have that plant bred so that it is blooming in a certain time of year. So it looks great around the holidays,
right?
You know, things like that. So the breeders get involved with, you know, the timing of it. So the timing of the plant, the bloom of the plant is important trend for breeders.
Okay.
So they're going to be looking at that kind of thing.
I would imagine this. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Well, I would imagine too that this whole program strategy is important now more than ever, I would think, because, you know, you've got this next generation of consumers that's come in during and since the pandemic, but, you know, a lot of it is made up of new and novice gardeners who may come into a store and, you know, whereas past, you know, longtime gardeners may know exactly what they want. These people might be coming into a store and saying, I want something like this. I don't know exactly what I want, but I want something like this. What can you give me? So I would imagine the process that you're talking about would be very valuable for those kinds of conversations.
It sure is. You know, I keep thinking about first year flowering because I didn't realize how important that really was until I really started working on it. There's a lot of our plants are really great for blooming the first year round. And I'm sure that would be a great appeal to any new gardener. Some of the other things of interest are deer resistance and of course, pollinator friendly type plants. Those are, you know, programs that we could kind of say, okay, these are great plants. If you live in a wooded area, if you're looking for shade, you know, shade plants. The two right now that are top of mind, well, there's three top of mind right now is our Rockies Hellebores program is brand new. And we were at Mance in Baltimore and there was just a lot of interest in hellebores, like everywhere you turned, everyone's talking about hellebores.
Yeah.
And we love to just take note that our hellebores are really unique because of the foliage. And the interest in foliage is something that I guess not every gardener's looking at, but it definitely appeals to someone who is a, you know, who's not new to gardening, who's not new to horticulture. Someone who has a keen eye can really notice the differences. The foliage on our Rockies hellebore series has jagged teeth. You know, the foliage is, you know, a lot of times you'll see hellebores with marbled leaves, but we have some that turn red. We have some that are speckled. You know, they have different interests going on, and it carries them through the year. So they may be blooming the first quarter of the year, and then they move into spring, summer, and then there's some interest that carries on through into the autumn period. So that's why the hellebores are going to be a big topic of interest with anyone you talk to, because that's what we saw when we were at Mance. The lupines, are you familiar with the West Country lupine series?
A little bit, yeah.
I want to make sure to mention those because, you know, they're not only beautiful and they appeal to a lot of people in different growing zones, the USDA hardy zones, but they've also been picked up as a, well, they've been considered a proven selection for some time. And it just shows the interest level in these plants. They're hardy, they're beautiful, they're pollinator friendly. There's just a lot of great stuff going on with these. And I've got a couple in my yard, so I'm excited to see how they grow this year too.
Nice.
So, yeah. And, you know, we have all our new varieties, of course. But one thing I like to point out is our Buddleia butterfly gold. Because we did a trial at our facilities in Lancaster, and we had, I don't know how many, maybe 7 or 8 different varieties of Buddleia. Yeah. And our Buddleia butterfly gold is fantastic because it has variegated leaves and it stands out. Like, you can see it from a distance and you're like, that's the one. And it really is beautiful. It has beautiful purple blooms. It attracts butterflies. I'm seeing that as a winner, an up and coming winner for our gardens.
Nice.
So I sent you a lot of information to weed through, but the top three would be those. And then of course our geraniums, we love those too, but
yeah. And all that information was really helpful too. So thank you for sending that in advance.
Feel free to use any of that. Anything that can help. The only thing I didn't mention in here regarding the marketing is, you know, we talked about social media, and content marketing and, you know, photography is very important. You know, we really, as a whole, our industry needs to continue getting better photography across the board. And we are definitely focusing on that this year with getting new photography. But another thing that's going to be important is videos. You know, you just see a lot of people doing, you know, video webinars and talking about the plants, how they grow. And I think that's a great way to interact with people. But in terms of like the IGCs, what we'd love to see is them using the programs for the plants that we talked about earlier, and then also promoting them on social media, because I look for that. Like, when I'm out looking for our plants, I'm like, who's carrying it? Who has our plants? And I want to see it on social media. I want to see it on their website. And the better the photography, you know, that makes me happy. So that's what I want to see.
Oh, the photo or the video can make all the difference in the world. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yes. And it takes time. You know, I'm in the process. I've made some videos, you know, and I'm trying to add videos as I go, like as I create them, add them to the website. So when you're looking at a page, you'll not only see the plant and you'll see all the details about the plant and description, but you'll have links to a sales page, a culture guide, and hopefully a video for each variety.
Nice.
So that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's all important. So videos and programming would be what I would say for marketing.
Okay. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead, Justin. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, one thing that's always a challenge for us, you know, as we go through this, because we are a global organization, you know, is keeping an eye on trends overseas, you know, which is not always aligned with what's happening here domestically. And that,
right.
that always creates some complexity. So it's, you know, we're always trying to make sure that we're finding material that's going to fit both markets as best as we possibly can. Cause you know, yeah, first year flowering is super important. We're starting to see almost an increased trend going backwards in Europe, where they are really looking for more vernalized material, and that they're finding that, you know, vernalized perennials are having more staying power and resonating better with the consumers because they're getting a more established root zone and, you know, can really kind of keep it for 5-7 years versus this 2-3 that we're seeing with some of these first year flowering varieties. So there's, you know, there's, you got to stay on your toes, I guess.
It depends who you're talking to.
Yeah, it's interesting trying to, you know, you see a trend emerging, but then you got to decide sometimes already quickly, you know, is this going to be something that's really going to last, or is it just, you know, a temporary thing? So,
yeah.
All right. You know, I'll ask one more question of each of you then. And it's kind of a theme that we've been positioning throughout all of 2024. And that's really about the future of floriculture and the future of this industry. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask each of you your thoughts on, just on a personal level, what are you most excited about when it comes to the future of this industry that you're in? And this could be this year and the years ahead.
I like that question a lot because, you know, I get excited pretty easily when it comes to plants, because this is what I focus on every day. You know, we've talked about drought tolerant plants and plants that, you know, can be durable and withstand difficult weather and things like that. But I think as the industry moves forward, there's going to be an interest in unique plants that, you know, that are not always available everywhere. So people are, you know, as they become better gardeners, as they become more familiar with horticulture, there's going to be a desire for more unique and, dare I say, rare plants.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, you know, I'm most excited to kind of watch kind of two things. I think one, automation and the inclusion of AI and what that means for production. And you know, secondly, kind of tying into that, what that means for diversity in genetics that, mm-hmm. you know, we recently saw the announcement of this new tomato variety that, you know, where they borrowed some of the genes from snapdragons and were able to include, you know, the darker purple producing genes that increase the, it's escaping me what it was, but it was like an antioxidant, basically increase the amount of antioxidants present in the variety. And, you know, while some of these techniques are, you know, not necessarily totally okay overseas in Europe, you know, as CRISPR is not necessarily a good word in some communities, it's, right. it's opening up possibilities, I think, for floriculture that, you know, we're going to see things that we just probably never thought we'd see. I mean, it was, you know, like Looney Tunes, you know, visions of the future type improvements that I think will be really, really, really interesting to see new colors turn on in varieties that we never thought we'd see before. I think those things are really exciting, but, and I think, you know, coupled with how they, you know, coalesce with this naturalist movement as well of, you know, where does the world of ornamental horticulture fit in with this naturalist movement? And what's that look like in 10 years, I think is going to be interesting, because I don't think that everyone's just going to go back to just only growing natives and doing right. that. I think that, you know, the ship has probably sailed on that. I think it's important. I think it's a, you know, really important movement. It's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people want unique plants and they want plants that are going to allow them to have some ownership of it as well and feel yeah. good. But, you know, what's going on with automation is just amazing, you know, and it's astounding to see what that is doing for the challenges that we face in the industry, labor challenges and things like that. And, you know, how young people are really shaping that future. It's really amazing. So.
I know I'm really excited to get to see the point where automation and AI become something that can really become grounded in a greenhouse too. It's like, we've been talking about it for years, but it still seems like such an abstract concept. It's getting closer, I think, as more growers yeah. are looking at it, but I don't know if we're quite there yet, but when it does happen, you know, there's potentially ways it'll, you know, rapidly innovate the industry, but You know, it's going to take, you know, more development, more buy-in, I think, and just an understanding of really how it works, because it's such an abstract concept at this point, I think. But
it's, it's unique. We have two auto sticking machines here. We have two ISO machines at Greenleaf's facilities, and you know, it's been neat to see the onboarding of those and what material can they work with, what can't they work with, you know, and then how does that influence the decisions of the growers when they're looking at XYZ varieties of, you know, is this going to work in my automated production model, and is it not? And is that going to then further drive what the consumers ultimately get to see? Because we've conventionally not been a big box kind of organization of, you know, when we look at plants, we're not hyper focused on, is this going to work in a Lowe's or Home Depot or Walmart? You know, we really look at the end user of, we've always brought great garden plants, and that's what we focus on. So it'll be interesting to see how automated production models influence that, you know, to the more interesting, unique varieties get squeezed out because they don't necessarily fit in with that model. So that's something
that's a good point.
Keep an eye on. If it doesn't, you know, work well on a sticking machine, that means somebody's got to physically do it. And there's, I think eventually will be organizations that just won't do it.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more at greenhousegrower.com. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen, and please leave us a rating, as it helps other podcast listeners find the show.